flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
You're listening to Ride at Home with Rich. And now, here's your host, Rich Orris.
Good Saturday afternoon and welcome to Ride at Home with Rich. I'm your host, Rich Orris. And today, Todd and I will be sharing some tips for water management. So get ready, grab a pencil and some paper, take some notes. We've had a lot of rain lately. We're going to do a Q&A style show here today, answering questions to educate all our listeners out there. Of course, as always, I'm going to have my On the Road with Rich and my hack segments throughout the show. Stick around for all of those as well. Great information today. I can't wait to get started. Todd, you know, let's get into this, but so I guess I'd begin with, what does everybody want to know?
Well, we get a lot of questions, you know, every day, every week. A lot of times, especially when it's raining like this a lot the past couple weeks, it's, you know, it's around water management, leaky roofs, leaky gutters, flashing, yeah, things of that nature, you know, water in my basement, all of that stuff. And it's certainly logical to be concerned about those things, and a lot of times homeowners are just at a loss of, you know, where to start.
Yeah, no, I think obviously we get so much of that, and I see so much of those things, you know, running around and looking at jobs and you know, dealing with remodeling and helping people, but also the issues that go hand in hand with that on making the houses watertight, airtight, and just good and healthy for everybody.
Absolutely, and you're an expert at that. That's why they turn to you. So, yeah, we wanted to kind of do like a Q&A session today where we've curated some of the most popular questions we get, you know, surrounding this topic. So I wanted to start it off with, you know, a question about a garage basement floor. Somebody has a floor that tends to be damp on a number of days, you know, as if it were condensation, and they wanted to know if you had any suggestions on how to cure the problem.
Well, so out in the garage, it does get a little tougher when you're into that, because basically the factor of it is it's moisture, it's condensation, it's caused by, you know, the floor gets wet, caused by basically the warm air, the high level of humidity. When the two mix, you just, it's like a glass iced tea sitting out in the sun or whatever. It, when you get that difference and you've got the humidity, it's just going to condensate. It can also be a factor of water underneath that floor too, because basically moisture vapors coming through the floor. So you don't necessarily maybe see the hydrostatic pressure coming up and water running, but you get enough moisture vapor from underneath that floor coming through. That's why when they do concrete floors, basement floors, you know, they put like a vapor barrier under there to kind of try and hold that moisture down. But as we work, as we walk on it, that plastic gets holes in it, through it, and it could be coming up from the ground also, mixing with the humidity level and the warm air, and then boom, you know, that basement floor is just wet. There's really not anything as far as like a coating or, you know, paint or anything like that that's really going to help that very much, because it'll just work right back on top of that. So it's kind of like a cave. When you think about a cave and you're in there and it's closed and you've got the humidity and the temperature and the dampness and everything, it just kind of forms and it gets those droplets dripping down. And, you know, so it's kind of works with the dew point and all of that thing. So it's definitely hard to keep track of. What you're looking to do is try and lower the humidity level. But when you're out in the garage, there's just not a whole lot that you could do for that. If you're getting it from underneath in the moisture vapor, you could maybe do a coating to try and hold that down, or drainage tile around it to try and get rid of the water that's coming there. But all you can really do is try and handle the temperature and the humidity to try and make it not happen as much. And then be careful. Mm-hmm. Because if it is happening, you know, those garage floors are a slick trowel finish, and they will, they'll be slick. I mean, when they get damp, so it is a huge slip and fall trip factor, you know, having that floor wet and everything. So definitely be careful as you're going in and out and trying to handle that. But that's really kind of what's happening with that and everything. So, you know, I don't, there's not a whole list of things you could do.
So let's say it just occasionally happens. You know, when is it going to become an issue where maybe the integrity of the concrete floor is going to be compromised and you're really going to have a big issue on your hand?
Well, you know what? It would take a lot of time. Still would. The slick finish that you put on a garage floor, you can put a sealer on that, but that finish is so tight, it almost doesn't work. It's you can do it, but you know, when you use sealers that you're trying to get into the pores and everything, you know, the pores are very tight on that slick finish. So yes, over time, it's gonna, you know, it's moisture in the concrete is gonna cause pitting and things like that. Eventually, you know, you will have to probably just replace the garage floor if it's happening a lot. But it's going to last years and years, and it's really going to work out and not be a huge problem, you know.
So just try to control the humidity, obviously clean up any sort of moisture in there so, you know, it isn't a big slip and fall issue.
Yep.
Like a cave, if you start getting stalagmites in it, that's probably...
Yeah, clean it out. You can power wash it, dry it, you know, things like that to keep it up to snuff. And I tell you, really, let's jump right into my on-the-road segment here, because it almost brought me right to the topic I was going to kind of talk about, which is a little bit different one, because I just saw this client a couple days ago, and I was actually looking at a bathroom, you know, adding a bathroom to his basement. But when I pulled up to the house and when I was walking up to the house and he was outside kind of watering his flowers and stuff, and I could tell he really takes care and maintains his home. His driveway was sealed. You know, he was a listener of the show.
Okay.
Appreciates the show. So I'm looking at things like, yeah, we talk about these things and he's doing them. And so, you know, there's all these different things I'm noticing with maintenance. And, you know, so really the importance of maintaining the home is almost more important than, you know, updating and things like that. If your home is not well maintained, people will know. It does not take a rocket scientist to figure out that they're like, oh, you can just see the dirt and the grime and the different things. And then they just start to get this sense that it's just not well maintained. And for him, what I'd really noticed was his driveway was sealed. Mm-hmm. And he's out in Wentzville, Missouri. And I'm looking at the other driveways, and as I drove away from his house, his neighbor's driveway, you know, they all have these pots and pits and things going on, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
Because he's sealed and kept up, and you know, sealing your driveway will not stop that 100%, but it's keeping the moisture out. It's slowing down that process, and it's having it not happen as often. So even if you get those pits and things going on, or if you already have some of them starting and you start sealing now, it will still be able to slow that process down. So you may have 10 or 15 little pits in your driveway, you know, 5 or 10 years later, where the neighbor's got 100.
Right. And how long should you seal a driveway? Is there a recommended time frame for that?
Well, it is a wearing thing. Okay. So it doesn't have to be done every year. And it depends on the type of sealer that you use, too, because some will last longer than others. He used a topical coat roll-on sealer so you can see it. You can kind of see it wear, and you mm-hmm. know when it's happening. If you use really one that goes into the pores and everything, you really just want to test it. Spray water on it and see if it's beating up. There's a lot of sealers out there that'll say they go 5 to 10 years, but it's really how much sun do you get, how much rain, how much weather, you know, and it just wears off. So spray it with water, see if it beads up. If it doesn't, it's time to reseal. And it could be 1 year or it could be 10 years, you know, that sort of thing. But the, you know, just the care he took and the notice, you could just look at everything and go, you know, this is great. He yeah. really is taking care of things. So with every, you know, everybody's worried about return on investment and all this different stuff, and they think, oh, I need to spend all this money to update and that. But there's a certain percentage of that you can get back just from maintaining and cleaning and just keeping up and right. doing the little things as they happen, you know, those sort of things, and people will notice.
Yeah.
And it's
because
great.
Because if not, they'll compound and it'll be a bigger cost in the end.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Well, let's go on to another question here. So, you know, a lot of the rain this past couple weeks, people had a lot of water damage in their basement.
A lot and of actually, flooding.
You know, a lot of flooding. According to Forbes, I have a statistic here, water damage, including, you know, damage from freezing, is one of the most common and most costly types of homeowners insurance claims. Every year, about 1 in 50 homeowners files a water damage or freezing claim, accounting for 29% of all homeowners insurance claims, according to the Insurance Institute. So the average cost of a water damage or freezing claim is $11,000. So this happens often. It is costly.
29%.
29%, almost a third.
Yeah.
So when this does happen, it's obviously, it's an unfortunate event. How, or, you know, what can a homeowner do if they do have a water damaged basement? How are they going to be able to dry that out to minimize, you know, potential damage?
Yeah, so the first thing you really need to do is you got to get everything dry, and you got to get inside of everything, and you got to be quick about it. You got to be fast. You've got about 3 days. You got about 72 hours to get things opened up and to get things dried out to where mold and mildew, you know, it will start growing in about 72 hours. So you have to definitely act fast. You have to remove basically anything that got wet that really can't be sealed or something like that. So like carpet, padding, drywall. Drywall is complete food for mold. Mm-hmm. So you got to pull back the carpets and the pads and everything. Anywhere that it got hit, you got to take off any base trim. You got to take off any drywall, maybe 18 inches or 2 feet high. If you can see the water line, you got to be above it. the framing and the things back in the wall, insulation, it's fibrous. So, you know, fibrous things like that, they just need to go. Cut it off, get it out of there. The framing, the wood, stuff like that can be cleaned up, sealed for mold if necessary to encapsulate it in there. And you don't have to get rid of that. But you really need to get all of this stuff out. Then you need to dry and dehumidify that area. Run dehumidifiers, run fans, and get this stuff to dry up as quickly as possible. I've even seen it in like main floors of homes, like the first floor or the second floor. Mm-hmm. The professionals have these systems where they tape the system to the floor. They heat the house up, get it really warm, and then when they blow these fans that actually suck through a tube that like sucks the moisture right out of the hardwood floors or gotcha. Stuff like that. And it'll just, so you need to try and dry it, you know, kind of quickly and fast like that, to be able to do that. Then, of course, you know, you got to get to the professionals or whatever to put everything back together. Call your homeowner's insurance, look at, you know, the claim that. And there are professional companies like ServPro and some of them that react quickly that will come out within that 72 hours and they'll take out everything that's been affected. It'll be covered by insurance and then you can move on to rebuilding and, you know, getting everything fixed back up and put back together, and really kind of, you know, ready to go. But drywall is one of the biggest things that you definitely have to get rid of because it's just food for mold, and it just it gets in there and you can't stop it, and it needs to be taken out and redone. So don't think you can save stuff like that. But doors, wood, they can be cleaned up, they can be sealed, blocked in, encapsulated in there, and you're good to go. So, so Todd, I think let's get into our first break here. I want to remind everybody that, hey, if you have these things, if you need something, you can call us at Mosby Building Arts. I'd love to come out and see it, 314-909-1800. You can check us out online at callmosby.com. Get all of our information there. You can find a ton of information about me, what I do, my shows, different things. Everything about myself, the company, and everything we do right there. So give us a call. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back after this.
And now, here's Rich's Right at Home Hack.
All right, guys, we are back. It is time for Rich's Right at Home Hack. And, you know, we're talking with Todd here today, answering some questions, question-answer format thing, talking a lot about the rain we've had, leaks, flooding, what to do about water. So I thought with the crazy rainstorms we've had and the flooding we've had, I would kind of talk about calculating our gutter capacity. You know, there's a general rule of thumb that we use for kind of a quick answer. You don't want to go over 40 foot a run of a gutter without, you know, at least one downspout, or once you get over 40, add another. But there's actually like a way to figure this out and get it right, because that rule of thumb doesn't always 100% work. So if you want to know really how to do it, what you need to do is measure your roof that's above the gutter to get the whole watershed area. Find out your rainfall intensity for your location. Rainfall intensity is basically measured in how much rain falls, you know, in a 5-minute interval. So it translates to inches per hour. And once you've figured that out, you basically divide that by the watershed roof area, and it will give you an approximation of, you know, it will handle so much. So basically in our St. Louis area, they were saying it handles about 1,200 square foot of roof for a downspout, and which calculates to 40 foot by 30 foot. So about a 40-foot run would work. But if it was 40 foot by 40 foot, all of a sudden you need another downspout. So it's worth looking in and checking out those calculations. to make sure a lot of homes today, they're so broken up, Todd, that, you know, it's like 10 foot here, 12 foot here. There's a lot of valleys and different areas that, come around and come together. So sometimes you really got to start to calculate like another roof area that the gutter dumps out onto this roof area that hits a 15 foot spot. And sometimes you really got to think about oversized gutters and downspouts to just kind of handle those extra needs for the way we design houses today. So Todd, what else we got? What else are people asking us about?
Yeah. So another question we get often when it pertains to gutters is gutter covers. Should I add a gutter cover to the top of my gutter? What are the options out there?
Yeah, and there is a lot of options out there. My direct answer would be yes, especially if you have trees that are taller than your gutter line, then you're going to get some stuff in there, so it's great to do. Here at Mosby, we try and really, you get what you pay for, that sort of thing. We try and really go to the top, and for several reasons of the house, we would recommend leaf guard gutters. It's a one helmet gutter integrated system that's one piece that works really, really well. And you know, this is an area for me where years ago, when I was a project manager for Mosby Building Arts, I did kind of a study on what we were doing for gutters and what were we recommending. And we were at the home show and Scott Mosby kind of put me on assignment and said, "Hey, Rich, here, let's do this. Go around and look at every different type of gutter cover, gutter helmet, gutter, you know, everything for keeping leaves out of gutters. And let's just verify that there's nothing better, that we're still recommending the best thing out there. Let's just make sure we're doing the right thing for our clients and we're recommending the right stuff." So I did. I went to every booth, every type. I gathered all their information. I read it later. I studied it. And I looked at all the different things. And really, the biggest piece of the puzzle for us is that, you know, gutter helmets, when you add them to your existing gutters, they connect to your roof. And that's just not always the greatest thing. It can work fine a lot of times, but when you get into a lower slope roof, it can be hard. If your gutters aren't installed properly and pitched properly, or if they're pitched too far, they're trying to take this helmet and really bend it down, you know, to get it to that gutter. So there's times when those situations just don't always work out. And I have literally myself, I've had homes where we had to take those helmets off to fix water issues, and they went to the leaf guard system. It wasn't connected to the house. It worked really well. And it just, you know, it's that whole get what you pay for theory. When, you know, you look at St. Louis older buildings and you look at integrated copper gutters in some of these 150-year-old buildings downtown, I've seen these gutter systems that are integrated into the roof and they've lasted well over 100 years. But that copper goes up behind that roof at least 18 inches. Sometimes up to 2 foot or 30 inches. When we put on roofs today, now we're like, yeah, put ice and water shield along that gutter line. It's 2 feet wide protecting that. So when you get this gutter helmet that just tucks underneath the shingle 3-4 inches, it's just not always the best thing going in how you touch the two. If you ever need a new roof, you need new helmets, or you need to take them off and put them back, you know, some insurance or some of the manufacturers will like want to void their warranty if something's touching their roof like that. It's not how it should be. So there's all sorts of ways not to do that. There are systems that you could use inside the gutter. We have one here at Mosby called SureFlow, and it works really well for most of the things that we have here in St. Louis. It'll stop the debris from getting in your gutter and getting in your downspouts, but it will lay kind of flat. So sometimes if you don't get good winds in an area blowing it off the top of that, you might need to clean it from the top up if your gutters are overshooting and running over or something like that. Kind of moves the area of maintenance possibly. But you got to think about the tree types and what kind of debris are landing there and what's getting caught there. You know, you have the big gumballs they'll definitely be hard for the wind to blow them off, and you'll have areas you need to clean off. So that's when you might want to, you know, go to like a leaf guard, because the gumballs will just roll off and won't collect and back up water and things like that. So there is a lot to think about when selecting those gutter cover types and everything.
Excellent. Excellent breakdown of that. Okay, what about if I have a downspout that kind of touches the ground, meets the ground, it's too long, what should I do there?
Yeah, so all your downspouts are going to come out to the ground. Your builders generally put a splash block, and it, you know, runs about 20 inches out, and then all of the water that comes out of that, you know, downspout is collecting around the foundation. It's sinking the ground. It's helping compact the ground and everything around there. So here at Mosby, what we would recommend is piping that downspout underground and taking it away from the house at least 10 feet. I would say 10 foot would be the shortest run that we would want to do. And if it falls off fast from there, that's great. If the yard's pretty flat, you might want to go 20 or 30 feet. But you can run that pipe out there and get that water far away from your foundation. Now, when we do this, we always want to use a plastic pipe, a smooth-walled, hard plastic pipe, like a Schedule 35 green pipe. It's meant for those downspouts. We glue these fittings. You don't want them leaking. So the black corrugated pipes, they leak, they bend, they crush easy, they get clogged up easy, and these systems will run the water through faster, get it out at the end, and get rid of it. Now, there is a very specific way when you run that pipe out in the ground. If you use a pop-up emitter at the end, there's a very specific way that you want to install that pop-up emitter. And if you have anybody telling you that they've had troubles with the pop-up emitters and they don't like to use them, they're probably just not installing them correctly. So at the bottom of the elbow that turns up to get the water out of the pipe and into the ground. So the pipe uses hydrostatic pressure to get that water out. The elbow turns up, it shoots out the top, and it runs off on the grade, but that leaves water in the pipe when the rain stops. So at the bottom of that elbow, there's a little hole, a weep hole, to let that water slowly go out to just go out to grade. It just goes into the ground. So underneath that elbow, you'll want to dig a hole at least about the size of a 5-gallon bucket, fill it with some compacted rock, put that system in, and that will keep dirt out of that hole. It will allow the water to seep out, and it won't leave too much water in there to freeze and break the pipe and things like that. You know, open-ended at the end if the hill's steep enough is great, but I've literally seen animals inside those pipes crawling in the winter, building nest in there. I have a photo of a chipmunk looking out of a pipe at me.
Really?
And I'm like, so everybody's like, well, we just do open-ended. Well, you got animals living in it. So either way, it could be an issue, you know, and there's maintenance to all of these things and cleaning and clearing and all of that.
Excellent. Okay, so let's go ahead, move on to a different part of the house here. Still gonna keep on the trend of water management, but there is a question here. I have a 9-year-old house with a tall wall of atrium windows, and they leak. We've been through 2 unsuccessful attempts to fix the problem. Do you have any suggestions on how to fix this problem?
Absolutely. So when we look at in most houses, so 9 years old, they're going to be vinyl sided. We see it all the time. And it's really how they build the house, how they wrap, how they flash, and what they do to all these windows prior to putting the vinyl siding on that really takes care of the issue. And to start, you really need to think about, well, where does water come from? Well, when you have 3 windows, you know, you have a door and some windows in the basement, and then it goes up and you have another row of windows, and then above that you've got another row of windows that have half rounds and all this on the back of this 30-foot back of the house. When water gets around those windows and around the J channel and everything, that's where it starts to come in. So you technically see this leak in the basement, sometimes on the first floor, but never really on the highest part. But the water is really starting at the highest part, and it's working its way down to each window, and that's where it starts coming in. That's why you see it so heavily along those basement windows, because you've got two areas to let water in behind the siding coming down to that. So there's a lot of opportunity for water to get behind vinyl siding when you have atrium windows like that. Dryer vents, light fixtures, outlets, anything with a J block around it, same thing. You know, letting the water in around there and running down the wall. So we got to get to our second break here, but when we return, I'll jump right into the fix of how we correct this with these windows. So we'll jump into that right when we get back.
You're listening to Ride at Home with Rich. And now, here's your host, Rich Horace.
All right, guys, we are back. Final segment here today, and boy, are we answering some great questions, stuff that we talk about all the time, especially when we get into this rainy season and we've had, like, the storms we've had. There's so many things going on. And so when we left for the break, we were talking about how water gets in and around windows and around atrium windows as well, because they're stacked, you know, how it's all getting in there. So let's get into the fix of how do you correct that? Because this is something that I've done for years now here at Mosby Building Arts. Unfortunately, we see this all the time still. Unfortunately, again, the biggest fix I see people trying that doesn't end up working is they replace the windows. And if you replace those windows with replacement style windows that are not meant for new construction, that do not have the nailing fins around them, and they do not take the siding off of your home to get to these windows to replace them, when you get wind-driven rains and it gets in around the third story window and it goes down to the main floor window and then it goes down to the basement window, it will get in again. And I see it all the time. Everyone said, well, what have you done to try and fix this atrium window problem? Well, I had all the windows replaced, but now it's happening again. Sometimes I've even heard it's worse. Now it's even worse because there's no fin. There's nothing to try and stop that water. So if you can try and imagine when they install a window, when they build your house, it has a nailing fin around it that is molded to that window. And when they put it in, they nail it around it. Well, that goes on top of that framing and it closes off the gap. So the problem with that is at the top of the window, it's on top of the sheeting. It's what we call reverse flashing. You need to flash it in a way that the water that gets back there stays on top. So imagine a roof shingle. If you put your roof on backwards, at every lip, water would go in instead of staying on top as it runs downhill. We need to do the same thing behind the siding with these windows. So when we go in to fix these atrium window leaks like this, we have to strip the siding off of that wall completely. We wrap everything in house wrap. So that way if we're replacing the windows, you don't always need to replace them. But we have windows with nailing fins. We can flash tape around them with a really good, strong, butyl-based flashing tape. Once that's on there, we can put a metal, what we call a Z flashing, at the top of the window, bringing the water back out from above to the surface of the window on the outside of your window pane. We can lap that into our house wrap, so the house wrap is on top of all of that at the top of the window. So it's like a roof shingle. As water runs down that house wrap, it stays on top of that flashing, it rolls out, it drips in front of the window. So we're bringing the water that gets back there back out to the surface of the window on the outside at each level. Basically, I could leave that vinyl siding off of your house for a year and you would never get a leak. And then we put it on there. It looks good. It works. And you're like, oh, it's so pretty. I love that Dutch lap siding. But that siding does not protect your house from water. It's what you do on the backside and what you do behind it to really make that work.
So the siding's there really to protect the framing and the sheathing of getting moisture.
It's purely aesthetic. Vinyl siding, you know, this is what I show most people when they have water problems too, and we're looking at their vinyl siding, and I look at the bottom edge of the vinyl siding. It has weep holes,
right,
to let that moisture, that water, all that stuff back out at each strip. So it's getting back there, and the siding industry has known that since the day they started making that stuff. And it's what we need to do to the wall on the backside. And the other great thing is when you do this so perfectly and you stop water infiltration, mm-hmm. you also stop air infiltration. So now you're more comfortable at the same time. So even when the wind blows and all of that, you've gotten to stop that too. You've made your house more comfortable, and it's safe, and it's dry, and we can protect your house. Even in our workmanship warranty, you're going to have 10 years guaranteed that that window is not going to leak again, and nobody out there really does that.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. Okay, that's good to know. Let's move on to maybe around the house, this time the perimeter of the house. We have a question about drain tile. So this person writes, my husband suspects our drain tile is blocked. Short of digging up the perimeter of the house, is there any way to check this? If we end up digging, would you be able to recommend a reputable contractor?
Yeah, absolutely. So the main thing for an exterior foundation drain like that is if you're high enough on the hill and you can find where this pipe comes out, then without digging, you can actually send in a camera.
Okay.
You can look at it. And it's great because you can find the spot. If it is just one spot, you can find the spot that needs to be repaired. And maybe you only need to dig down in one area, fix one piece of pipe, and then the whole system's back to snuff. And the same company running the cameras can then run cleaners and clear out those drains and get them working and get them running again. You repair the bad area, and everything's functioning again for you. So we use a company called River City Sewer and Drain that does a lot of our camera work and all of that so that we can find out what's wrong with your sewer lateral, what's wrong with these drains around the foundation. We look at downspout drains like that sometimes. And then, of course, they do the plumbing systems inside your house and everything too. And they can locate the problems with that camera. They can also locate it for us. So when we find the problem, he can walk over there and use his little sensor and say, yep, it's right here, make a little mark, and he can use that sensor to tell us how deep we even have to dig. So sometimes we even use that system just to figure out, we know we're going to fix it, but how deep is it? How do we know what this cost? Is it 8 feet? Is it 3 feet? Is it 5 feet? You know, how do you really know? So if you do that and you find out what you truly need to do, then you know how to correct it. Now, if you can't get to all of that and it's a really old house, then the next option is looking at an interior drain, getting a foundation, specialist company to come out. And what they do is they put in a new drain on the interior of the footing, put a sump pump in the house. You know, nowadays when we build new houses, they just put this inside in every home, because it's so easy to do while building. But they can come in and retrofit a system like this on the inside, breakout concrete, put it back. I would always recommend the investigation of the outside first, if possible, just because, if you can stop that water before it starts coming to the inside of the footing and you can make it work again, more power to you. It's so much better. Don't let that excess water come around, get under your footing. It can then start to cause settling and all sorts of other things that's happening. So if you can handle it from the grade, if you can handle it from the pipes outside, always the best way to do it. But if you get to where there's just no way to do it, then Stratum Structural Systems is who we're going to say, have them come out, look at that sump pump system, get it installed. They can manage that water, do really good, great thing for you, and keep your home safe and dry and functioning and everything.
Very good recommendation for everyone out there. Stratum is a great company. I'm going to move back to the gutters here. We have a question about, how do you fix a gutter that is pulling away from your house?
Yeah, so that there, The first thing you have to really find out is the fascia board behind the gutter the problem? Because gutters pull away from the house for two reasons. One, your fascia board is wood and it's rotting out. And a lot of people, you know, we wrap these boards with metal and out of sight, out of mind, it's never going to rot because it's wrapped in metal. But if you're getting water back there, it's rotting that board away even faster because it can't really dry with the metal. It doesn't get the air. It doesn't get the sun. You know, so wood-painted houses that didn't used to have these problems, and then we wrap it all with metal, all of a sudden they're like, why am I getting water now? Well, because your board's rotting away 10 times faster than when it got to dry out and breathe and all of that. So you got to kind of poke around at that and make sure your board's okay. If it's not okay, then obviously you got to take your gutter off, replace the board, replace the metal wrap, get a new gutter put on and everything. But a lot of times what happens is they use nails instead of screws in these gutters. And a nail relies on the wood and kind of like the pores in the wood swell up when you drive a nail into wood. And over time, that can just start to let go. The board kind of expands and contracts. The nail just gets loose and it just starts pulling away. So if your fascia board, you're poking it with an ice pick, you're doing stuff like that, basically, you just go to screws. Get new fasteners that actually screw in. Find the rafter so you go through the fascia board into the rafter also, and that will tighten everything up, snug it up, and put that gutter right back where it needs to be. And, you know, 8 out of 10 gutters that are starting to pull loose, really the fascia board's fine, and you can just get them attached right, get them working well, and we're all good.
Excellent. So, all right.
Easy
great
way
advice
to
again.
Do it. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're just about out of time here. Had a great time. We need to do this question answer format thing again. I think it was great.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. It, you know, gives homeowners a lot of advice on stuff that they probably are desperate to know, because a lot of times you're in a situation that, you know, with water, you got to fix it right away. So.
Yep, and if you need any of the things that we talked about, find Mosby, give us a call. We'd love to help you out. For everybody else out there, I'll talk to you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.
You're listening to Ride at Home with Rich. And now, here's your host, Rich Horace.
All right, guys, we are back. Final segment here today. And boy, are we answering some great questions, stuff that we talk about all the time, especially when we get into this rainy season and we've had like the storms we've had. There's so many things going on. And so when we left for the break, we were talking about how water gets in and around windows and around atrium windows as well, because they're stacked, you know, how it's all getting in there. So let's get into the fix of how do you correct that? Because this is something that I've done for years now here at Mosby Building Arts. Unfortunately, we see this all the time still. Unfortunately, again, the biggest fix I see people trying that doesn't end up working is they replace the windows. And if you replace those windows with replacement style windows that are not meant for new construction, that do not have the nailing fins around them, and they do not take the siding off of your home to get to these windows to replace them, when you get wind-driven rains and it gets in around the third-story window and it goes down to the main floor window and then it goes down to the basement window, it will get in again. And I see it all the time. Everyone said, well, what have you done to try and fix this atrium window problem? Well, I had all the windows replaced, but now it's happening again. Sometimes I've even heard it's worse. Now it's even worse because there's no fin. There's nothing to try and stop that water. So if you can try and imagine when they install a window, when they build your house, it has a nailing fin around it that is molded to that window. And when they put it in, they nail it around it. Well, that goes on top of that framing and it closes off the gap. So the problem with that is at the top of the window, it's on top of the sheeting. It's what we call reverse flashing. You need to flash it in a way that the water that gets back there stays on top. So imagine a roof shingle. If you put your roof on backwards, at every lip, water would go in instead of staying on top as it runs downhill. We need to do the same thing behind the siding with these windows. So when we go in to fix these atrium window leaks like this, we have to strip the siding off of that wall completely. We wrap everything in house wrap. So that way when, and if we're replacing the windows, you don't always need to replace them. But we have windows with nailing fins. We can flash tape around them with a really good, strong, butyl-based flashing tape. Once that's on there, we can put a metal, what we call a Z flashing, at the top of the window, bringing the water back out from above to the surface of the window on the outside of your window pane. We can lap that into our house wrap, so the house wrap is on top of all of that at the top of the window. So it's like a roof shingle. As water runs down that house wrap, it stays on top of that flashing, it rolls out, it drips in front of the window. So we're bringing the water that gets back there back out to the surface of the window on the outside at each level. Basically, I could leave that vinyl siding off of your house for a year and you would never get a leak. And then we put it on there. It looks good. It works. And you're like, oh, it's so pretty. I love that Dutch slab siding. But that siding does not protect your house from water. It's what you do on the backside and what you do behind it to really make that work.
So the siding's there really to protect the framing and the sheathing of getting moisture.
It's purely aesthetic.
Purely aesthetic.
Purely aesthetic. Vinyl siding, you know, this is what I show most people when they have water problems too, and we're looking at their vinyl siding, and I look at the bottom edge of the vinyl siding, it has weep holes,
right,
to let that moisture, that water, all that stuff back out at each strip. So it's getting back there, and the siding industry has known that since the day they started making that stuff. And it's what we need to do to the wall on the backside. And the other great thing is when you do this so perfectly and you stop water infiltration, mm-hmm. you also stop air infiltration. So now you're more comfortable at the same time. So even when the wind blows and all of that, you've gotten to stop that too. You've made your house more comfortable, and it's safe, and it's dry, and we can protect your house. Even in our workmanship warranty, you're going to have 10 years guaranteed that window is not going to leak again, and nobody out there really does that.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. Okay, that's good to know. Let's move on to maybe around the house, this time the perimeter of the house. We have a question about drain tile. So this person writes, my husband suspects our drain tile is blocked. Short of digging up the perimeter of the house, is there any way to check this? If we end up digging, would you be able to recommend a reputable contractor?
Yeah, absolutely. So the main thing for an exterior foundation drain like that is if you're high enough on the hill and you can find where this pipe comes out, then without digging, you can actually send in a camera.
Okay.
You can look at it. And it's great because you can find the spot. If it is just one spot, you can find the spot that needs to be repaired. And maybe you only need to dig down in one area, fix one piece of pipe, and then the whole system's back to snuff. And the same company running the cameras can then run cleaners and clear out those drains and get them working and get them running again. You repair the bad area, and everything's functioning again for you. So we use a company called River City Sewer and Drain that does a lot of our camera work and all of that so that we can find out what's wrong with your sewer lateral, what's wrong with these drains around the foundation. We look at downspout drains like that sometimes. And then, of course, they do the plumbing systems inside your house and everything too. And they can locate the problems with that camera. They can also, like, locate it for us. So when we find the problem, he can walk over there and use his little sensor and say, yep, it's right here, make a little mark, and he can use that sensor to tell us how deep we even have to dig. So sometimes we even use that system just to figure out, like, we know we're going to fix it, But how deep is it? How do we know what this cost? Is it 8 feet? Is it 3 feet? Is it 5 feet? You know, how do you really know? So if you do that and you find out what you truly need to do, then you know how to correct it. Now, if you can't get to all of that and it's a really old house, then the next option is looking at an interior drain, getting a foundation, you know, specialist company to come out. And what they do is they move that, they put in a new drain on the interior of the footing, put a sump pump in the house. You know, nowadays when we build new houses, they just put this inside in every home because it's so easy to do while building. But they can come in and retrofit a system like this on the inside, break out concrete, put it back. I would always recommend the investigation of the outside first, if possible, just because, you know, if you can stop that water before it starts coming to the inside of the footing and you can make it work again, more power to you. It's so much better. Don't let that excess water come around, get under your footing. It can then start to cause settling and all sorts of other things that's happening. So if you can handle it from the grade, if you can handle it from the pipes outside, always the best way to do it. But if you get to where there's just no way to do it, then Stratum Structural Systems is who we're going to say, have them come out, look at that sump pump system, get it installed. They can manage that water, do really good, great thing for you, and keep your home safe and dry and functioning and everything.
Very good, you know, recommendation for everyone out there. Stratum is a great company. I'm going to move back to the gutters here. We have a question about how do you fix a gutter that is pulling away from your house?
Yeah, so that there, the first thing you have to really find out is the fascia board behind the gutter the problem? Because gutters pull away from the house for two reasons. One, your fascia board is wood and it's rotting out. And a lot of people, you know, we wrap these boards with metal and out of sight, out of mind, it's never going to rot because it's wrapped in metal. But if you're getting water back there, it's rotting that board away even faster because it can't really dry with the metal. It okay. doesn't get the air, it doesn't get the sun, you know, so wood painted houses that didn't used to have these problems. And then we wrap it all with metal. All of a sudden they're like, why am I getting water now? Well, because your board's rotting away 10 times faster than when it got to dry out and breathe and all of that. So you got to kind of poke around at that and make sure your board's okay. If it's not okay, then obviously you got to take your gutter off, replace the board, replace the metal wrap, get a new gutter put on and everything. But a lot of times what happens is they use nails instead of screws in these gutters. And a nail relies on the wood and kind of like the pores in the wood swell up when you drive a nail into wood. And over time, that can just start to let go. The board kind of expands and contracts. The nail just gets loose and it just starts pulling away. So if your fascia board, you're poking it with an ice pick, you're doing stuff like that, basically you just go to screws. Get new fasteners that actually screw in. Find the rafter so you go through the fascia board into the rafter also, and that will tighten everything up, snug it up, and put that gutter right back where it needs to be. And, you know, 8 out of 10 gutters that are starting to pull loose, really the fascia board's fine, and you can just get them attached right, get them working well, and we're all good.
Excellent. So, all right.
Easy
great
way
advice
to
again.
Do it. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're just about out of time here. Had a great time. We need to do this question answer format thing again. I think it was great.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. It, you know, gives homeowners a lot of advice on stuff that they probably are desperate to know, because a lot of times you're in a situation that, you know, with water, you got to fix it right away. So.
Yep, and if you need any of the things that we talked about, find Mosby, give us a call. We'd love to help you out. For everybody else out there, I'll talk to you next week.
More at 971talk.com.